This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
As the climate warms and storms increase in intensity, people living along the world's coastlines are becoming increasingly vulnerable. At one time, mangrove forests ring the oceans and protected inland areas from flooding. Now many of the mangrove forests have gone, leaving mudflats in their place. The Mangrove Project, based in Port Angeles, Washington, is working to bring those forests back. Alfredo Porto is the executive director of the Mangrove Project, and he joins me this morning from Port Angeles. Hello, Alfredo.
Hello.
Now, most of us have probably never been inside a mangrove forest. What's the environment like inside a healthy, mature mangrove forest?
Well, a mature mangrove forest is basically a beautiful rainforest. It's a coastal rainforest, and they can actually exist in brackish water conditions, so they can now compete the freshwater plants that way, and they've developed a niche for themselves. And there's a lot of freshwater ways, like streams and rivers, that go through the mangrove forest area where the mangroves need the freshwater as well as the seawater to mix and form the brackish. So these mangroves live along the coast. They can go miles inland, actually kilometers inland, because of their ability to live in salty conditions. They can basically predominate the landscape along the coastline.
And how does a mangrove forest like the one you've been describing protect inland areas during a storm?
Well, the mangroves, they stand like a buttress or a buffer against the waves or winds. They can actually reduce the impact of waves or winds tremendously. So anyone living behind a mangrove forest would be more protected from these kinds of tsunamis or storms that can happen. And this is the thing that we want to try to emphasize, the need to protect the coastlines with rising sea levels because of an increase in erosion and wave actions that can really affect the coastal areas. So mangroves kind of are the last defense, in a sense, against this kind of sea rise and climate change as well.
So aside from protection from the ocean waves during extreme weather, what other kind of environmental benefits does it provide?
It's an amazing ecosystem because it provides basically for the local people fuel wood, it provides medicines from the bark or leaves or roots, provides fruit, provides detritus for the fish and other marine life, it's habitat for migratory birds that use it for feeding or resting. It provides also a nursery for fish. It's a nursery ground for fish. Basically, the smaller fish live in the mangrove roots at high tide and can hide from the bigger fish. And so basically, they're able to survive until they get big themselves. And it's amazing also for climate change because it sequesters more carbon than any other tree species, about four times more than inland rainforest. And it stores that carbon, sequesters and stores carbon, basically in its peat system below the mangrove roots for hundreds if not thousands of years, which is one of the amazing features of mangroves. Tremendous amount of carbon is stored beneath the mangrove forest soils.
Sounds like a really amazing, highly evolved ecosystem that has just multiple benefits in so many different aspects of the environment, from cultural to sea life to the atmosphere itself.
Exactly, and recent storms like the cyclone that hit Philippines Haiyan were basically reduced in areas as far as their intensity and effect in areas where mangroves stood their ground. Areas where had no mangroves because the developments were affected more vastly and increasingly. We're seeing this evidence from other storms that have happened in India, other places, Bangladesh and so on, where mangroves are. There's less damage, less infrastructure damage, and less loss of life.
Now, why have so many of the world's mangrove forests been cut down?
Over the years, there's been several different developments, but the biggest leading cause of mangrove loss has been shrimp farming, of all things, agriculture of shrimp. They've spread shrimp farms around the coastlines of Asia, Latin America, and now going to Africa. And they're situated on the coastlines because the mangroves, in a sense, occupy an area that's just easy for shrimp farming, for access to the water conditions they need for raising the shrimp in these ponds. So they developed these ponds along the coastline and to clear the mangroves out of the way to do this. And over the years, these ponds have destroyed about 1 million hectares of mangroves. And a lot of these shrimp farms are not sustainable. They only last for 3 to 5 years before they're closed down. And so there's a lot of abandoned, maybe 400,000 hectares of abandoned shrimp farms. That's over 1 million acres of abandoned shrimp farms worldwide now.
So shrimp aquaculture is the main reason. Are there other pressures that have reduced the mangrove forests?
There are, and one of them is tourism. It's a big one. Like in Thailand, you'll see beaches that have tourist hotels and restaurants along the beach where the mangroves have been cleared. Bimini Island, which was Hemingway's book called Island in the Stream. Island in the Stream was inspiration for his well-known novel. It's got mangroves right now being destroyed by tourist development, making hotels, golf course, marinas, and so on, just to bring tourists in, basically, to see an island which is being ruined by that tourism development. So the benefits of ruining the island are going to basically take away the importance of that place as a place to visit. And we see this worldwide with other industries from, building golf courses to petroleum exploitation to, in Nigeria, for instance, a lot of the mangroves there are being destroyed by oil development over the years, contributing to global warming again. That's one thing, when you destroy the mangroves, you're releasing that carbon that they've stored. Oftentimes when you plow up the shrimp farm ponds, that mangrove soil is being opened to the air and it's releasing that carbon at a very rapid rate. So that's kind of a double effect of destroying important forests for sequestering carbon, but as well releasing that carbon becomes an actual source of carbon pollution.
Yes, I think we're experiencing the same thing in BC for the first time. Our carbon sinks have become actually a source of carbon in the atmosphere.
Exactly. It's a real serious matter that people are not paying enough attention to. And we talk about climate change, and there's still debate going on whether it exists, but we know it exists. There's, 97% or more scientists are warning us to take heed, and it's just not happening because of business interest, basically.
Now, following the catastrophic tsunami in December 2004, there was a push by governments to establish mangrove green belts. You say that many of these efforts failed. Why is that?
Because they're not following the ecology of the mangrove, the true ecology of a mangrove. For instance, when you introduced me, you said the mangroves are being destroyed and being replaced by mudflats. This is not correct. It's actually the mangroves and mudflats exist side by side. When the sea level rises, the mangroves go upland and the mudflats become more prominent. When the sea level decreases and goes down, the mangroves will occupy the mudflats. So the mudflats is actually another type of ecosystem. And this is the problem worldwide. There's a lack of understanding of coastal wetlands and the interconnection between mudflats, mangroves, salt flats, salt marshes. All these are very important, and yet people don't understand the ecology. So the ones who went ahead with this ideal to restore the buffer zone for mangroves were planting in mudflats oftentimes, and those are not the right place right now for mangroves because sea level rise especially. The mangroves need to be planted up more upland and more in the mangrove areas that exist. And oftentimes they ignore the actual mangrove sites that more conveniently plant the propagules or the seedlings of the mangrove in the mudflat. And they just kind of make lines of string along the coast and plant one after another. About every meter, they plant a seedling. And they say this is successful. We planted 1 million mangrove seedlings in one day. They have these contests now. Guinness World Records have been set. But they don't go back during a year to see what's actually happened to those seedlings. And they oftentimes will find complete failures, if not 80 to 90% failure rates of mangrove replanting. And I tried to warn about this in 2004 when I knew there was going to be a mad rush to restore that mangrove buffer zone. But few heeded the warning, I'm afraid. But now we're seeing more evidence of people starting to recognize the problem.
Now, in your work with the Mangrove Project, you've developed a model of restoration that you found does work in restoring forests. If you had to pick a couple of key aspects of your approach, what would they be?
Well, the main thing is restoring the mangrove forest means restoring the hydrology and also ensuring that the actual cause of the mangrove loss in the first place is taken care of. The cause could be as simple as a shrimp farm going in there. You have to stop further developments in those areas. You have to also restore the hydrology because the waterway is very important for mangrove forests. They need the sediments deposited by the upland systems, and they also need the fresh water to mix with the brackish or the seawater. And so without the fresh water inputs, mangroves can die. And if there's infrastructure, for instance, roadways and other structures built above the mangroves, shrimp farms and so on, it blocks the hydrology that feeds that mangrove forest. So we really need to look at the total water system to manage the water system from mountain to sea, in a sense, that integrates a better management plan.
Is there an importance to involving the local community? Does that aspect come into it at all?
It's vital, because local community people are right there on the site. They're the best monitors and best people to conserve that forest. Plus, it benefits them directly. They have benefits from protection from these storms. They have benefits for the mangrove nursery for fisheries, which they can then use to sustain their villages and so on. That's really important that they're involved. Otherwise, with government only or industry only, it's not going to happen. We know that community involvement is essential.
Now, with the current rate of climate change, it's predicted that sea levels are going to rise significantly. How well will the mangrove forests that already exist survive this rise?
This is an important question. We don't know how fast that rise will be. If the rise is at a slower rate, the mangroves can actually survive and migrate upland. Like I've mentioned, they can actually colonize. As the sea level rises, the brackish water will kill the freshwater plants, and the mangroves will replace those freshwater plants. But if it's a really rapid rate, the mangroves may not have time to actually colonize. Another factor is the building behind the mangroves, of shrimp farms or roadways, hotels, and so on. The mangroves need a buffer upland right now established so they can actually colonize upland. Otherwise, they'll be caught between a rock and a hard place, in a sense. And also, the sea level rise is actually a factor that mangroves are really important because they can accrue soil. They hold the sediments that come from the upland area and build up the soil, so they can actually raise the coastline level a little bit to fight off the sea level rise effect. And they can hold the coastline in place with their roots, which is very important to stop the erosion, which is going to happen with increased wave action and increased sea level.
Seems from our discussion today, this is a very vital environmental issue. Is mangrove restoration on the agenda for national governments?
I think it's becoming more so. There's a thing called blue carbon, which is including the mangrove, salt marshes, seagrass beds. Understanding the ideal that mangroves and these other systems actually sequester a lot of carbon and can play a real important role in reducing climate change effects. So it's starting to become more and more recognized. One of the biggest issues that are halting us, though, is the private ownership of the lands or industries that exist there and the need for dollars, basically, or need for money from all these countries that are struggling right now to develop their economies. So the temptation is, can we actually conserve and make enough to support our economies? And we try to say that their mangroves are worth a lot more than a shrimp farm, for instance. It's between $10,000 to $16,000 per hectare. I've read different estimates, and the shrimp farm might be only worth about $1,000 or less per hectare, not including the repercussions of having to repair that damage they've done to the coast and restore those areas once the shrimp farm is abandoned.
It's been really fascinating talking with you this morning. Thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me on there. We have people look at our website, www.mangroveactionproject.org.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Alfredo Cordo is Executive Director of the Mangrove Project, and he spoke with me this morning from Port Angeles, Washington.